Blog Talk Radio.
And I can make a firm pledge under my plan, no family making less than $250,000.
Let me say it as simply as I can.
Any form of
transparency
tax.
And the rule of law will be the touchstone of this president.
That, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Even presidents need reminding that our rights come from nature and God and not from government. The right that makes all the difference now is the right to choose our own leaders. And you are entitled to the clearest possible choice, because the time for choosing is
Missouri
drawing near.
Grassroots Radio is proud to present your favorite hillbilly, Mr. Kevin Harned.
And good evening. As we welcome in studio tonight, Richard Blowers. Rich, thanks for coming in this evening.
Anytime, Kevin. Glad I could be here.
I'm sorry for the whole, we've got a little confusion or a little mishap with our headphones this evening, but we're going to try to make everything work anyways. A lot of things coming up with the elections coming up on this next Tuesday, and there's all kinds of things for us to consider both on the national and local races. We should have Carl Bearden calling in around 7:30 to discuss Prop A and some of the reasons why he thinks that you should support it. Many in the grassroots movement have been, I tell you, really honestly, this is one of those different propositions or one of those bills that really kind of splits things amongst grassroots movements. I think this is where we really test the foundations of the grassroots on many of these different types of things, because whenever everything kicked off originally, everything was really easy to rally behind. Whenever we're talking about like Obamacare and a lot of these other issues, I mean, it was really easy foundationally to fall behind. Now we're getting into some areas too, like after those have been battled for a while, where you search for other things. And sometimes you don't get the same kind of overall support for or against something that you do on previous issues. And Prop A seems to be one of those, because I see those in the grassroots movements that oppose it greatly, and I see those that support it because of other reasons that they give.
Yeah, it's not really a cut and dried issue. You have, you know, the city of St. Louis, do you want them to be in charge of their own police department, or should the state of Missouri run it? St. Louis County, if I'm not mistaken, they run their own police department. It's funded by the St. Louis County taxpayers. Now, I don't have a problem with St. Louis running their police department as long as they don't look for the rest of the state to bail them out if they don't run it properly.
And that kind of goes along the whole line. We had talked a little bit earlier, and whether it's the state of California or anything else, or even in your own household with your own children, whenever they are not coming to you to bail them out, whenever they're not coming to you to ask you for funds to do things, they have a lot more freedom. I mean, that's just it's true. I mean, I noticed that whenever I was a kid. Once I got a job when I was 15 cleaning carpets at $2.35 an hour, you know, while you're in school, that's not a lot of money, but you know what? It was a lot of freedom, because even if I garnered $35-$40 during the course of the week after school or anything else, man, that'll get you in the skating rink. That'll get you a few other places that you don't have to hit mom and pop up for. And you know what? Your chances are going are much greater.
Yep. And, you know, if they can run it successfully, then more power to them. And I think it's a pretty odd situation compared to any other spots in the country. Is there any other city in the country that does it this way?
Kansas City does.
They're the same way?
Yeah. But outside of that, and again,
is
it all
Kansas City, Missouri, or Kansas City, Kansas?
Kansas City, Missouri. Because
so it seems to be uniquely Missouri. This is.
It does seem to be. It's very. I don't know if any other state has or not. But again, this dates back to the Civil War, and whenever you were looking at a lot of the people in St. Louis were that they were concerned. Let's put it this way: the governor was concerned that you had the largest, basically armed militia at that time and he wanted control over them as far as, you know, their I guess, alliances. He was worried about them being converted for the Confederate causes. So they're
kind of outdated.
Right. Well, and there's a lot of other aspects. And Carl Beard, and hopefully everything will work out fine with the whole way that the mics are going tonight. But he is going to be calling in later. There's a lot of other things that are going on. I noticed tonight, too, that knucklehead Bloomberg, our favorite mayor from New York.
What do you do now?
Well, he's done with the big gulp. He's done with, you know, what the formula for the infant children and so forth. But, well, and this is no surprise either, but he is endorsing President Obama. And on Thursday, he not only endorsed Obama, but the reasons why he gave was Hurricane Sandy. Now, can you imagine why that would be?
I can't imagine one day changed 3.5 or 4 years of a failed presidency. I don't. They're just looking for something or grasping at
right. Well, his let's put it this way: his endorsement of President Obama has brought climate change to the forefront. And you know what? If I was Romney, then I would look forward to that argument. Quite frankly, Bloomberg says our climate is changing. And while the increase in extreme weather we have experienced in New York City and around the world may or may not be the result of it, the risk that it might be, given this week's devastation, should compel all elected leaders to take immediate action. So the risk that it might be, Richard, tells us all that we should totally change everything that we know about our present.
I saw a guy this morning on the news, and I've seen him before, and he's a great weatherman, Joe Bastardi, and he was just going off on this. He said, severe tropical storms are at a 50-year low right now, but they keep saying there's more and more tropical storms, and they're more severe, and it's just not true. And there
right.
was a big climate scientist came out a couple weeks ago and said, look, the temperature peaked 15 years ago, and it's been on a gradual decline. There's no such thing as – yeah, there is climate change, but these guys think they can fix everything.
Even that word that you just said. Now, it used to be global warming.
Right, yeah.
Why did we switch to climate change?
Because it quit warming.
Right. I got news for them. We live in Missouri, and the one thing that we've always said is if you don't like the weather today, hey, hang around because it'll change. And –
last fall, it was 70 degrees on a Saturday, and by 7 o'clock at night, it was snowing.
Right.
You know, so climate change is a fact of life. But we're not going to change it. I'm sorry.
You know, the one thing that totally blows my mind is that from even data that is collected, most scientists do not dispute, and I hate to throw that term out there because that's the term that they like to use so much. But, you know, who disputes the fact that we've been in ice ages?
Right.
How do we come out of them? How do we go into them? I mean, this was pre climate change, right?
Yeah. Yeah. it's only been the last 110, 120 years that we've had heavy industry on the planet.
Right.
And we had some of the hottest times the planet's ever seen 500, 600, 800 years ago.
Right.
That they've documented.
Right.
It's the planet. It's nature. It fluctuates. And
right. You've got sunspots, solar activity, other things that are going on all the time. I mean, there's a multitude of different things that affect climate.
Absolutely.
And again, just to declare that just that it might be, we need to act upon it. Well, if we use that philosophy on other things, as a matter of fact, unfortunately, we do use that philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
On other things. So that's one of the things that definitely drives me in. So Mayor Bloomberg is at it again to endorse President Obama. Surprise, surprise. You know, I'm looking at different articles too. Here we've got one that says FEMA comes to the rescue in wake of Sandy, but will it need Sandy? So again, we're along the same lines. It's talking about all the great things, I guess, that FEMA represents, and the fact that you know that they're fearing that Romney's going to cut FEMA.
I have a question.
What's that?
Jimmy Carter undoubtedly one of the greatest presidents of all time. The Department of Energy. Yeah, it's hard to do, believe me. You know, he started with an executive order, both the Department of Energy, which sole goal after the gas crunch back in the 70s was to wean America off foreign oil. That was the sole, if you go back and look at the executive order, that was the purpose of the Department of Energy, get us off foreign oil. That's been real successful, hasn't it? We're more dependent on foreign oil right now than we ever have been. And if you look at the budget for the Department of Energy, it's gone from a pretty meager amount to, I believe it's in the $30 billion range, for basically not really doing a whole lot of anything. And I think FEMA, you know, what did we do with tornadoes and hurricanes before Jimmy Carter? America wasn't washed off the planet. You know, people weren't inundated. I mean, you're always going to have natural disasters. But FEMA has not been around forever. You look at Katrina and how that was handled, and that was an utter disaster.
It was an utter disaster.
And you know, people always blame Bush for that, but that's the federal bureaucracy that runs FEMA. Bush doesn't run FEMA. I'm sorry, the president does not run FEMA. That's set up to, you know, to run itself, and the government gives it money. Which
you would think today, though, Rich.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that, yeah, they take full credit for a successful FEMA operation. But, you know, that used to be left to the state. You know, look at the tornadoes in Joplin. FEMA came in, and they were kind of held at bay by the state people and the local government, because they were handling the situation. And when FEMA comes in, they take over everything. They want to run it their way. And you report to them, and the state said, no, we can handle this. This is, you know, in our realm. We'll take care of it. You just stand back. If we need anything, we'll let you know. That's the way it should be run.
That's the way it should be, but right. That's the way they don't want it.
No, they don't want it because, you know, you get into this prepper mentality. And how many people up there on the East Coast, well, Katrina was a disaster that way. Nobody was prepared. They told them to leave. They didn't leave. Ray Nagin had hundreds of school buses to evacuate people. He left them sit in a parking lot, and then they were underwater. So there's so many failures in Katrina that if people would have listened, and if people would have been, you know, the storm hit Monday, so this is the third, fourth day after the storm hit New York and the East Coast, you know, the supermarket shelves were empty. I saw a video of that. Right. That got cleaned out. And no power, no water because they lost power. Well, what would it have taken 6 months ago to go buy some cases of bottled water, some extra canned goods, you know, just common sense things, and you'd had a lot less headache. Now, you know, people are trapped. They're having to be rescued. And I think that's the way.
Like a Christmas rush. Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like for a snowstorm, try to go buy a gallon of milk or a loaf of bread. They disappear in a heartbeat. And it's just one of those things where I think that it's overrated. You know, I remember Obama in an interview saying that he was going to cut all the necessary red tape to get things done. Why would there be a lot of red tape in emergency management situations? You would think that that would be the most streamlined situation to get the stuff where it needs to go, supplies, money, manpower. There should be no red tape. Who put that red tape in place? Probably him. But now he's going to cut through it and work miracles to save the East Coast and at least try to look presidential on something.
So it's once again, you know, we're talking about just how things get out of control at the federal level. You know, one of the things, whenever Branson recently got hit with their earthquake, whenever they were offered assistance too, they didn't want it. As a city, they had local contractors and other that came in and cleared everything. They didn't ask for any help.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing that I really like about that area is that they are very much down to earth and
independent.
Yeah. I mean it's really neat. It was refreshing to see instead of lining up and
help me
yeah, requesting yeah. federal aid yep. or to be, you know, slobbering over the boots of Jay Nixon or President Obama or anybody else.
Right, yeah.
For that matter, trying to get funds. No, we got it. you know.
Right. We'll take care of our own. Thank you very much.
And that's a really neat thing to have. I don't know if you saw it or not. It was the first time that I had seen it, but the reverend who gave President Obama's inaugural benediction reportedly says he thinks whites are going to hell.
I saw a blurb about that when I got home from work today, but I didn't have time to watch it much. And it's just amazing how that race card keeps getting thrown in, and I'm just so tired of it.
Especially in the background and the history of the president,
right?
Whether it be Wright, you know, Jeremiah Wright, or whether it be this individual, Joseph Lowry. And according to an account in the Monroe County Reporter, Lowry said that when he was a young militant, he used to say all white folks were going to hell. Then he mellowed and just said that some of them were. And now he's back to, I don't know what kind of a N-word wouldn't vote with a black man running. And he believes, again, that all white people just about are going to hell.
Well, do these guys forget that Barack Obama's mom was as white can be? And, I mean, so where does that leave him? You know, I just don't understand how they tend to pick and choose. And Reverend Wright was a really vile individual when it came to talking about that. You listen to some of those sermons that he gave. Just absolutely venomous, and how you could talk that way in a house of God is just amazing to me. And how people would sit there and listen to it and encourage it and cheer. You know, how could the president sit in that church for 20 years and not have some of that rub off on him?
Well, and again, or how could you not have that philosophy? People tend to associate with those that have kind of like mentalities.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if another president had been in attendance of KKK minded people or anybody else, he would be completely painted as being an associate.
Unless you're Robert Byrd.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Unless you happen to be
a high ranking Democrat, right? Yeah, then you can get away with it, right? Yeah, it's sad. And the thing is, there's so many things policy-wise that I personally disagree with this president about. I don't need anything else.
Absolutely,
it's,
you don't.
There's enough right there that makes me want to just see him go away next Tuesday. Well, not till January, but hopefully Tuesday it'll be the first and last term of President Barack Obama. I saw somebody posted something on Facebook, and it was somebody had done a video about, and somebody said, what will you do if your child asks you, why isn't President Obama the president anymore? And my comment was, it doesn't matter what color your skin is. If you suck at your job, you're going to get fired. And that, I mean, that's a simple way to put it, and that's what's happened.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to work.
Right. Right.
Not.
Yeah. Yep.
So.
And you shouldn't get special considerations just because your skin is a different color than anybody else that's ever been president.
Nor should you be asked more of.
Right.
I mean, either way.
Right.
It should be. If we're truly seeking a colorblind society, then that's what we should be.
Right.
It shouldn't play a factor. It does, and it's built in. There's built-in factors. So.
Yep.
Those are all things that. That unfortunately are all slanted and something that we can't honestly dialogue about.
Right.
I mean, any time that you try to dialogue about it, you get beat up on. Whenever we look at different things, you've heard of possible UN monitors. Actually, there was supposed to be some, I believe, in Jeff City for our elections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
We've
I saw that.
We've also got FBI members that are supposed to monitor our elections, and I want to play a quick clip for you here real quick.
Why are you guys putting some special emphasis on Election Day then?
Well, we did this 2 years ago, and so I don't think we're putting any more special emphasis on the election next week than we did it in 2010. We don't anticipate a problem, but I think by getting the news out that we have hotlines open, we we increase the chances that there won't be a problem. The last thing you want is to have a problem and you're not prepared, or people don't have a place to complain, or you're not prepared to straighten it out on election day.
Have you folks ever prosecuted an election fraud case on election day that you know of 2 years ago or whenever?
We didn't prosecute a case on election day. 2 years ago, we did prosecute a voter fraud case that occurred in the 2008 election, and that was something that the St. Louis City Board of Election commissioners discovered in their post-voting canvassing. And I think a couple years earlier, although I wasn't with the office at that time, I think there were two or three false voter registration cases that were prosecuted. And so there have, every now and then, yes, there have been some.
Is the one case that was prosecuted, was that somebody voting in, I thought I remember somebody voting in two precincts or something, or more than one precinct?
No, someone voted in Illinois. It was somebody who was a student over in Illinois, but also a resident in Missouri, and they voted in each state.
Okay. What kind of penalty is there for something like that?
The penalty range that goes up to 5 years and are a fine, it's just going to depend on the case and person's motives and truly what a judge decides.
So you folks have a hotline in your office, and the number would be, you know, the number right off the top of your head?
Sure. It's 539-7733.
Okay.
The FBI's is 589-2500.
Now, is the FBI operating separately from you, or are they operating under your office, or do we have a dual thrust here?
Well, all the federal law enforcement operates in conjunction with our office, but they're down the road, and we're each running with a hotline, so that people have no one place is going to get inundated. You know, most of the calls we get really involve local matters. Sometimes it's complaints about people electioneering too close to the polls. Sometimes it's the way that somebody's been treated by a poll judge or worker. And a lot of the calls, we're simply able to redirect the individuals to the appropriate local authority so it can be worked out. I mean, that really is the bulk of the calls. The history has been that we've gotten.
Yeah. It's the thing, I guess, one of the things to emphasize that you mentioned earlier is that if somebody does pull something funny, it's not something that might be spotted right there at the poll on election day, but as the clerks go back through verifying election results and checking election results with computers and the like that we now have, the chances are pretty good somebody's going to get caught if they try to pull something funny, I would think.
Well, I'd like to think we're going to catch it. We aim to do that. And also part of this is just to make sure that the people who are eligible to vote are able to vote without being intimidated or harassed.
I don't know, Rich. I mean, some of the things that was said in that particular thing, for one thing, did you know, and I did not know that until recently, you did not have to file under your legal name whenever you applied to vote. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, no.
Yeah, I mean, like if they called you Rich Buzz Blowers,
right,
you could sign up to vote, register under Buzz Blowers.
Oh, yeah.
And there you go again. I mean, how can that not be an invitation to fraud?
Right.
You ought to have to use your legal name,
right?
And to go along with a photo ID. I'm sorry.
Some people have a lot of nicknames.
Some people have a lot of nicknames. But let's say that you had two residences, one in St. Louis and one in Jefferson County, and you know you were registered under Buzz Blowers up there and Richard in Jefferson County. Mm-hmm. You know, what's their chances of catching that?
No, it's
slim to none.
They won't. No, they won't. And it gets down to the same thing. You should have a primary residence, and that's where you vote. And I think I'm not mistaken, for tax purposes, you have a primary residence, and if you have a secondary house somewhere, you know, you don't get the same tax benefits on that as you do your primary, and it should be the same for voting. You have a primary residence that's where you vote, and I know a lot of elderly folks will go down to Florida for the winter, okay, and they have a house down there or a residence down in Florida. How easy is it for them then to try to register to vote in two separate states? I mean, it would seem to me that there should be some safeguards to make sure that that doesn't happen. And like you said, you should use your legal name. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I thought that I had to send in a copy of a birth certificate and something else to Hillsborough in order to register to vote.
And this is going off of what our lead position has informed me of, that you did not need to use your legal name. So I was honestly shocked when I had saw that. It invites fraud. Yeah. I just cannot believe that you do not need to use your legal name whenever it comes to that.
Well, voting is such a highly regarded right and responsibility in America that it's just amazing that so many people want to treat it with such casuality and not, you know, why would you not need to have some sort of an ID to prove you're who you are when you go to vote? I mean, we all know that a lot of people don't, a lot of registered voters won't vote. So who's to say walk in and you see a list and that's me right there, and point to a name on that list? You don't have an ID, you don't have anything with you. And from what I understand, a lot of places, that's okay. Now, where I vote, the precinct that I vote at, I have to have an ID. I present an ID, sign in, they actually look at it and actually match it up to the address and kind of look at the signature too. So I feel good about where I vote.
I have no problem with that.
No.
None.
Not at all.
As a matter of fact, the loosey-goosey rules I do have problems with. And then not only that, I'm thinking it was, I want to say Michigan. It's Michigan or Minnesota, but I think it was Michigan that a judge ordered them to remove the checkbox on the registration process that declared that you were a legal citizen, because he was afraid that it would cause confusion. That's a fact. And we talked about it last week, but I mean, some of the rulings that are coming out of some of these courthouses that deal with ballots, and again, they talk about the right to vote, we shouldn't disenfranchise, but this is on a total different spectrum.
Yeah.
It's on the flip side of the coin. I mean, to me, you're disenfranchising legitimate voters,
right.
U.S. citizens.
It makes it too easy for legitimate citizens' votes to be wiped out by people who should not be voting.
And one of the things that's locally that we want to talk about tonight is Prop A, and again, that deals with local control of the St. Louis Police Department. We've got Carl Bearden that's going to join us here in just a minute or two, and he's going to tell us why you should vote yes on Prop A. We've heard a lot of no votes, and we're going to get into a conversation with Carl here in just a second, and let him share his thoughts on why we should support it. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, Hillbilly Logic, with Richard Blowers in studio tonight, and we'll be back in just a moment with Carl Bearden.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
You got better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so the few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
And welcome back to Missouri Grassroots Radio. Sorry about that. Again, we're having a problem with our headphones in studio tonight, so I might actually even ask Dave Court to jump in here in just a little bit if we have any problems during our interview with Carl. Carl is a proponent of Prop A. He wants to see it passed. And quite frankly, I'm in agreement with Carl whenever we're talking about the Prop A proposal. Carl, you're on with Rich Blowers and Kevin Harnett on Hillbilly Logic. How are you doing this evening?
Hey, Rich and Kevin, I'm doing great. Appreciate you guys having us on. Hello? Hello?
Hello.
Well, okay. Kevin, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, we're having a little trouble hearing Kevin. Kevin, if you're there, we can't hear you. So, Carl, it's Dave here. How are you doing?
Hey, Dave. Great. Well, I hope Rich and Kevin can hear us because, you know, I was enjoying their conversation earlier.
Oh, yeah. That's it's always great. I actually had not planned on even chiming in tonight. I come along on Thursdays when I can just to hear Kevin. He's really, really, really good. Prop A again, one more time. I mean, you would think this was presidential politics, the amount of time this thing is getting on the social networks and on the kind of ire that's being generated here over this thing. It is really about whether or not the people of St. Louis should have control of their own police department, isn't it?
No, it is. And Dave, as you know, it's a fundamental conservative principle. It's a Jeffersonian principle that, you know, we could read the quote, but essentially what Jefferson said is that the government belongs closest to the people where the function is being delivered. And certainly, you know, your police department in Springfield or your sheriff's department in Greene County, for example, belongs to you. I mean, you need that oversight through your elected officials. And for those who don't know, I mean, here's the biggest problem that I find most people outside of St. Louis have with this is they don't understand why they're voting on it. And very, very clearly or very, very short summation is in 1861, the newly elected governor wanted to secede from the union. At the time, and he was Democrat-controlled legislature. At the time, the Republican-controlled St. Louis held the largest paramilitary force, being their police force. The governor convinced the Democrat legislature to take over the Republican police force and keep them away from the Union Army and the Union Arsenal. It all failed, and there's a great write-up if people want to find out about exactly what happened in the archives of the state back on Secretary of State's website. But for that purpose, in 1861, the police department was taken away from the people of St. Louis. Now, it's been almost 150 years since the Civil War has been over, certainly been 150 years since they took it. And the people of St. Louis, who have been paying the bills for this, at least part of them, because we as state taxpayers pay part of it as well, have said just 2 years ago in a non-binding referendum, 70% of the voters in St. Louis said, we want our police department back. I think from a fundamental conservative standpoint, we should give their police department back to them.
Well, absolutely, and quite frankly, I mean, for the rest of us in the outstate who are paying, what'd you say, $6 million over four or five years?
Yeah. It was a snapshot that I'd ask the Office of Administration, so these aren't numbers that I, you know, cobbled up or made up or whatever. I specifically asked the Office of Administration of the state who takes the budget how much between, at that time, that snapshot was fiscal year 2006 and fiscal year 2010, we as state taxpayers, non-residents of the city of St. Louis, pay for our state-owned and state-controlled police department that operates in St. Louis. And that answer is over $6 million in liability claims and costs to defend those deals. And people say, well, why are we doing that? Well, 1861, the state took it over. It became a state agency. The courts over the years have found that because it is a state agency, the state is responsible for that state agency. And that's why we, you and I, who do not live in St. Louis, are paying costs associated with the St. Louis City Police Department.
And so I guess one argument then for us outstate folks, listen, Kevin, I'm not trying to take over your program. As soon as you can hear us and get on here, you just
Dave,
jump right
up.
Back in and take over. Oh, am I breaking up?
That's your back
Hello?
Now?
Okay.
David.
That might be that I moved farther away from my mic there unintentionally. Yeah, Kevin, I'm not trying to take over. So as soon as you can hear and get back in here, jump over and take your show back. Richard, are you still with us? Maybe not. So maybe it's just you and me for a bit. So basically then, for us folks down here in southwest Missouri in Greene County, we could actually make an argument that it doesn't matter whether St. Louis wants it back or not. It's $6 million in 5 years. We ought to just give it back to them. Maybe I'm the one that's not here anymore. Carl seems to have dropped off. Okay, so I'm going to go on talking as though I'm the only one left on the air here. Okay, there is Kevin back, and that might be Carl back. Kevin, are you back?
Yes, sir. Dave?
Okay, Kevin's back, Carl's back. So, hey, you guys just go ahead and talk about this thing for a while, and I'm going to shut up.
I do want to know one thing, Dave. Can you hear me fine?
I can hear you fine, sir.
Okay. All right. Because a big part of the problem, again, like I said, our headphones are all messed up, so we're having to run it through a different system. I apologize for that.
Now, is Richard in studio with you? Because I don't see him in the studio here, and I couldn't talk to him.
Richard is in studio with me.
Can you hear me now?
Richard?
I'm here. Can anybody else hear me?
Did you hear what where Carl and I left off, Kevin?
Absolutely, I did. And here's the biggest problem that I have with this whole scenario, and that is it's such a slippery slope. I think any time that we start deciding whether we want to pass legislation or deny or vote no on legislation because of who is in office, I think that is a big clue that maybe we shouldn't be supporting it in the first place.
Well, Richard, Kevin, that's a good point, because here's the question. Again, outside of the greater St. Louis area, people understand the fundamental principle of local control. Nobody that I've talked to believes that the state should be controlling their police department. But once you get into the St. Louis area, you get into more of the political issues. Let's face it. St. Louis has been under Democrat control since probably about 1948. Does that change principle? No, it changes party, it changes partisanship, but it doesn't change principle. And so as you get into the St. Louis area, you find that most of the people opposed, and I won't say that all of them, but most of the people opposed to this actually are opposed to it because the Democrats are in control, and until that changes, they don't want to give it back. And I can tell you, as a former legislator who actually used to oppose this, that was exactly the reasons that most of us were opposing it, because we thought we could put on the Democrat machine in St. Louis some requirements that would make them change, and that was all wrong. I mean, I've admitted that in blogs that I had taken the wrong approach to that as a legislator.
Well, Carl, whenever I looked at it too, if we deny legislation because we don't like who is involved, that also means that we have the possibility to pass legislation because we like who is presently leading that. and it's bad legislation. So we run the risk on both sides of the coin.
Oh, it does. I mean, it is a two-sided coin. That's what people don't understand. And, you know, several of them, Dave's been one of them. Several people have been asking, you know, a couple of things. One, give me the facts of why you oppose Prop A, and we're still waiting for facts. We do hear about, you know, Democrat machines. We hear about sanctuary cities. We hear about all sorts of things. They're not factual, but we hear stories. And then the question is asked, and I believe it's Tom Hartz down in Springfield asked it, so would this be different if Republicans were in control? Would you be willing to give it back then? And if you answer yes to that, then you're on the wrong side of that coin.
Absolutely. Absolutely you are. And that's exactly what I was talking about. One of the problems that I see that's coming down the line, too, is an ends justify the means. And
right.
we've got to be very careful with that because we lose the argument in other areas. Whenever
right.
you make adjustments, yes, I agree with this principle, but in this case, well, then the rest of your argument's gone. I mean, on all the other things that you stand on principle on, how can you say that from there on out? I mean, it's got to be something more than we're protecting the stupid people from themselves. And,
right.
and, that's the main argument that we keep coming back from on Prop A.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an excellent point. So let's contrast because people may be confused. Again, you know, why am I voting for – I don't live in St. Louis. Why am I voting for this? Because it's a state statute. State statute has to be changed. The legislature actually agreed this year not to do anything on it. They pretty much passed or were ready to pass a bill that pretty much mirrored – it was there's some differences, but pretty much mirrored Prop A. But it got tangled up in the economic development mess year before last. And this year with Prop A on the ballot, they just said, we're just going to let the people vote on it. And so they are not opposed to this. But you have to vote on it as a non-St. Louis City resident because it is a state statute that we are changing and implementing. So that's why. But there are two police departments in the whole country that are not controlled by the citizens through their elected officials of those two cities. And coincidentally, they're both in Missouri, Kansas City and St. Louis. I already described that St. Louis was taken over because that of the Civil War in 1861. Kansas City has a completely different history. Kansas City was taken over because of corruption. And I believe that there was a legitimate reason for the state to step in, but now the state needs to take a look at that, and I think they will in the next year or two, and say, okay, what changes have been made and what's going to be in place to correct that corruption issue, and then give it back to them. The state should not seek to hold on to those police departments just to have them, because I can tell you right now that becomes a very political football issue, and that's what we've seen in St. Louis.
Now, wouldn't that also come into play when we're talking about the election of the mayor? I mean, couldn't this also be a factor that comes in? If he's mishandled the police department, wouldn't that also be an issue come election time?
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's what elections are about. You know, we put people in charge to handle these things for us. We ask them to take control of, in this example, the police department. And when we hold them up, just like we're going to do on Tuesday, we're going to hold up elected officials, people running for office, particularly incumbents, and say, how well have you represented me in this Republican form of government that we have? And if the answer is you haven't done very well, I'm voting for somebody else. And that's the way it's supposed to work. But that's not what happens with the people of St. Louis in regards to their police department.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And I can't help but to hear the same theme. It all circles back around from the opposition, and that is we can't turn it over to the corrupt Democrats and the corrupt people that's in office now. I mean, that seems to be the same theme. We need to protect the people from themselves. And that's same theme that the other side uses to base all of their arguments, whether it's against a 32-ounce Big Gulp or whatever it happens to be.
Right. And if you look...
I mean, I don't know if you know Richard Blowers, Carl.
Yeah, Richard, I think we may have met at some point.
Yeah, I think we have, Carl.
But he's another guy that I find that is intellectually honest. I mean, he seems to weigh things out. And you can't... I mean, other than the principled aspect of it, you really, you know... He's predictable at how he's going to fall on things, you know. And then this is one that he also supports is local control.
Absolutely. The city of St. Louis, I think they're capable of running their own police department. I don't know why Jeff City would want to run it. It's not 1860 anymore. And I find it funny that the only two police departments in the country that are run this way are both in Missouri. So I think it's a high time to let them control their own destiny and let them control their police department also.
Well, and I think, you know, if it were you and I, if the shoe was on the other foot and the state controlled our police department, we would feel as though, and rightfully so, that we have no direct input into that. I'm writing out a tax check to my city that helps pay for that police department, but I have no say, no direct input into that police department. If that shoe were on the other foot, you and I would be clamoring for that as well. And it's really, you know, a partisan issue of saying the wrong guys are in charge. I have problems with partisanship trying to trump principle.
Well, absolutely. Again, we're back to that. Now, I noticed that Dave is back on with us. Dave, do you have any input?
Oh no, I don't. I was listening, and you know, it's basically my thoughts are exactly what you folks have said so far. I mean, I think I said somewhere today that I would gladly vote to keep control of the city of St. Louis's police force and keep it out of the hands of the corrupt mayor. The day that proposition also includes giving me a vote on that mayor.
Right. So you're saying that because you have no vote for the mayor, then it's really not your place.
What happens to the St. Louis Police Department and what happens to the St. Louis mayor and what happens to the policemen's pensions, it belongs to the people of St. Louis.
I can't argue with that. And again, now this also comes into place if I'm not going to say down the road, if there's not a need to step in, if there is total mismanagement or anything else, as long as they're not coming to the state, well, they're currently coming to the state for assistance. But the whole thing is that I do believe at this point that we need to offer or give them the chance to control their own destiny.
And I mean, quite frankly, does St. Louis think they are better than Springfield? Or would they sit by and let me go to the state and say, I don't like my mayor, take over my police department, please?
Right.
And Joplin and Rolla and whoever. I don't like my city council, take over my police department, please. Or is St. Louis just so much better than the rest of us that we need to run their police department and then the rest of us fend for ourselves?
Right. And the other aspect of that whole picture is, too, I still think that it weakens our argument on other issues whenever we vary off of our principles.
And well, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that's been Carl's argument from the start. And I'm going to say right here, Carl and I started on different sides of this issue. And as I looked at it more and more, I said, well, you know, I mean, the principle is right.
The principle is right. Carl, are you still with us?
Yes. Yep. So you're hitting all the correct points. And really, that's what we need people to do is step back. Okay, what is the principle involved? What does Prop A do? Does it support the principle? Is it supported by the principle? And if that answer is yes, how can you do anything but vote no? And I can't let, you know, is the city going to mess it up? You know, who's in charge of the city? Who don't I like that may be endorsing this issue? You know, it really has to boil down to the principle. Boil the meat off the bone, and if all you have left is bone, that's what you got to use.
And I have back to a severe issue with even being able to consider who is in charge on whether to pass legislation or deny it.
Right.
Because, I mean, we pass poor legislation because we like who's in charge, and we deny possible good legislation because we don't like who is in charge. And that changes. Even if it hasn't for decades, that should not play a role in whether it's good legislation.
Right.
It's
funny you say that because as a legislator, you know, as budget chairman and speaker pro tem, I would get new guys come in and say, man, I got this great idea. And they would give me the great idea. And I said, you know, so what happens when, you know, for example, Matt Blunt's not in office anymore. Well, we'll have to change it. I said, then it's not a good idea, is it? Because if it can't stand the test of time, regardless of who's in charge, it's not the right idea.
Absolutely.
You know, they had to go back and kind of conjure that up. But, you know, you hear a lot of things, again, I mean, and Dave's been going through some things tonight, I know, you know, about why we shouldn't vote for Prop A, you know, corruption in the city. Now, I'll tell you, if you talk to most anybody, I mean, I could come to Springfield. You know, I grew up in Piedmont down in southeast Missouri, a town of 1900. I could go down there and ask people if they think there's corruption in their city government, and it doesn't matter where I go, I'm going to get a yes. Everybody thinks that there's some level of corruption. The problem that the people who use that in St. Louis of using it against Prop A is there's been more documented. I'm not talking about talked about or rumored about. I'm talking about documented levels of corruption on the state-controlled police board than there has been in the city of St. Louis. And so even if there, you know, principle, it doesn't meet the principle just because partisan, but even there, their arguments fall apart.
Well, Carl, I also have a tendency to believe that anytime you centralize a power, you have a greater chance of corruption.
Right, right. And I think that goes back to the Jeffersonian principle, and I think that's exactly what he was talking about.
And whenever you look at it, what can the people of St. Louis do to change that board that's controlled in Jeff City?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing.
Kevin's headphones are shot again, so we'll just carry on till he gets back. And okay, so Carl, yeah, you know, and I heard you mention this today, this very same thing. You know, when you talk about corruption at the state level, you know, the big cry until about 3 months ago was, well, you know, as soon as you do this, the union is going to get fair share. The union is going to be able to close the shop and force everyone to pay union dues. And by golly, if the state didn't do that last contract.
Right. So the state-appointed board, and Kevin started to go to the state-appointed board, what they could do to change it. Absolutely nothing. They don't get to appoint those people. They don't get to approve those people. They don't get to remove those people. All of those are appointed and approved by the Senate. I mean, so there's a process, but none of them are okayed or otherwise approved by the citizens of St. Louis. So they have to be City of St. Louis residents, but they are not selected by those citizens, and it is not government closest to the people because there is no come and go. So it's an interesting argument that people try to make on that.
It is, and. And I'm weary of it, quite frankly. You know, we've been discussing this thing for and you know, honestly, Carl, those people on the other side of this are just never going to get it. I mean, I'm tired of beating my head against the wall on this thing, and hopefully we'll get it right. But I don't know any other way to say it. I mean, I don't know any other way to explain the principles of Jeffersonian America to someone who just doesn't want to hear it. Do you?
No, and it is kind of frustrating. I mean, you know, you realize they get frustrated with us too, right?
I suppose, but
yeah. So, but the Jeffersonian principle is clear. It ought to be delivering the services at the level that makes the most sense and the one that has the most benefit from it. But also what Kevin was saying, you know, the closer that is to the people, the less likely corruption is going to be tolerated forever and ever and ever. And so that's what happens and is part of the cure, if you will. Now, does that mean that happens when you and I want it to? Does that mean sometimes we're not on the outside looking in? I've been there. I mean, I went into the legislature as a member of the minority party, for example, and so I can tell you what that's like. It's a lot better being on the majority party. But from time to time in our lives, whether it's our private life, whether it's our work life or political life, we're going to be on the outside looking in, and we have to always remember those sound principles, because if you stick by principle, it doesn't matter whether you're on the outside or you're on the inside. Things are going to operate the same. Because when you get on the inside, you're going to want that to be that way.
Absolutely. Yep, that's right. Kevin?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So
okay.
I'm thinking that's great. Carl, is there anything else that you'd like to share with the folks? I know Dave had said that we have beat this about as much as we could beat it, and I believe that pretty much, you know, those that are staunchly against it, and those that are staunchly for it, we're not going to sway many in that way.
Right.
There will be some that we're teetering that we could reach. But again, you know, like I said, we just need to be consistent.
Right,
and I
exactly.
believe we're displaying that consistency on this case.
Well, that's right. And so just to recap, you're voting on this as a non-resident of St. Louis City because it's a state issue. You own the police department right now. And so you're voting on whether or not to give it back to the real owners, the people who are paying the operational cost, and that's the citizens of St. Louis. And I think that's the right principle to do. And you know, again, fundamental principle. Do you want your local police department, sheriff, whatever, controlled by the state? Is that the proper role of state government? And barring, you know, super corruption and so forth, like we saw in Kansas City, I think that answer is no, and I think most people believe that to be the case as well.
Yeah, and if we fancy ourselves as small government conservatives, if it can be done at the city level or at the local level, it should be done there. If they can't handle it, then the state should run it, and I think the city of St. Louis should take charge of this.
Right, and who pays the biggest price for not being successful? It's actually the residents, and sometimes we have to feel a little pain before we're willing to make the correction.
I agree. Carl, thank you for joining us this evening. I appreciate
your
hard work on this particular topic.
You bet. We appreciate it. Thanks.
Oh, feel free to call in anytime. And
all right.
Calling into Hillbilly Logic on the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. We'll be right back in just a few.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details. Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Back to Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. You're listening to Hillbilly Logic Show. We had Carl Bearden on just a short period ago, and he was sharing with us some of his reasons to support the Prop A as we're moving along. And I'm going to try to kill this so that we can go back on. Back on where we should be. All right, Carl, thank you for calling in. Dave, I appreciate your input too, and everybody else's for that point. Richard, thanks for coming in this evening. I appreciate, like I said, you're always an intellectually honest fellow.
I always enjoy coming in.
And you're always welcome also. You know, we're looking at a lot of different things that is coming up on the ballot. There's people may claim that there's not much of a difference on many fronts, but quite frankly, I think that's a major understatement. I believe that there's vast differences. Whenever you look at, regardless, I mean, you know, if you looked at from the pure sense of, you know, how constitutional that a Ronald Reagan may have been through all of his political career, whether it be governor, even or as president, he wasn't what you would call constitutionally pure, but he was heads and tails better than Jimmy Carter as far as a choice for the country. Would you not agree with that?
Absolutely.
And that's some of the things that we should consider as we go to the polls. come this next Tuesday is the fact that I honestly believe that if you took Ronald Reagan and applied today's standards that some folks are putting on politicians per se, he couldn't live up to them.
No,
he couldn't. But look at the difference. And I have never. I mean, I was not an overwhelming Romney fan by no shape, form, or fashion.
No, Romney was not my choice either.
And the bottom line is, though, the contrast between him and President Obama is pretty stark.
Yeah, and you get a lot of folks will say, well, they're two wings of the same bird. Well, to an extent, that I think is true. But when you look at what Obama has said he wants to do, what he would do when he was campaigning in 08, and what he plans to do in a second term, there is a massive difference between him and what Mitt Romney says he wants to do.
And the other aspect of that too, Rich, is the fact that we have seen a lot of what he said that he wanted to do come to fruition, and we don't like it.
No,
he's running from it.
He won't answer questions. He can't run on his record. All he does is talk about, you know, we've got to rebuild the middle class. Well, I don't know that it's government's job to rebuild the middle class. I think it's government's job to get out of the way and make it easy for small businesses, because that's the group of people that's going to turn this economy around. And I think right now everything hinges on the economy. So many other things are in question because of the bad economy. You know, people talk about food stamps, welfare, about all these other issues that would go away with a thriving economy.
Well, and a lot of that, too, we're back to energy being the backbone of an economy. And quite frankly, his energy policy has come to fruition. I mean, he wanted $4 plus gallon of gas, of oil, I mean, of gasoline, $4 plus a gallon. We got up there, flirted with it, hung around it for a while. You know, nobody liked it. He said that the electric rates would increase. You know, there's been more than 100 coal-fired power plants that have been closed.
Well, he said under his plan, electric rates would necessarily skyrocket.
And they have.
And they have, yeah.
And I don't know if you did, but I got my Ameren UE request for 17% hike recently.
Yep.
You know, and these kind of things are to be expected. Rush Island, where we live, is a coal-fired power plant.
Yep. Yeah, they're all coal-fired plants around here. And there's some railroads that have had to cut back because they're not shipping as much coal because these plants are shutting down.
Well, and again, then you've lost numerous jobs in the coal mining industry along with other areas. And these are resources that we possess in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's insane to kick them to the curb or to raise prices so much just to enable some of these presidentially preferred green forms of energy to compete, you know, and that's not, it's never a good thing whenever we artificially raise the price on one product so that another product can compete.
It doesn't work. And, you know, everybody touts the low inflation rates, but they don't take into account energy and food. And those two items, like you said, 17% for Ameren UE. What about your gasoline prices? You know, they've gone up, what was it, $1.80 something when Obama took office, and it was up close to $4. Now it's down at $3.20.
Yeah, and that's just gone up by 20 something cents here recently. It got down to $2.96.
Yeah.
And that made absolutely no sense. This morning when I went to work, it was $2.96.
Well, sure it does. Yeah. According to Obama, when gas prices are down, the economy sucks.
You know,
and when they're up, it's thriving. So that's telling us that it's not thriving, well, it's coming down.
Well, not only, though, whenever you look at it, I understand, you know, again, the most dangerous kind of things are half-truths.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a half-truth.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, whenever we're looking at the global economy and other things and how things are humming. But the bottom line is, we all know that whenever it was $4 a gallon, it wasn't a good economy.
Oh,
all right?
Absolutely.
So that is moot.
I was,
you know,
pointing out the ridiculousness of that statement that he made. I couldn't believe he actually said that.
Now I will say this. I mean, whenever the economy does collapse, gas consumption goes down, everything else. And if you look, I mean, we get a few good days on the stock market. Then you have speculators that start jumping on oil futures because they want to get ahead of the curve of a global recovery. and it drives the price up. But I mean, I specifically remember, I mean, in 2008, whenever everything went to hell in a short period of time, gas, I filled up in Columbia, Missouri at $1.26 a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
So I honestly believe that helped us from a total collapse. Because had fuel prices not dropped that fast, that far, with oil down to something in the realm of $26 a barrel or something around there, I believe with that being pretty much energy being the backbone to the economies, I think that might have been it.
Yeah,
you know, I do. That gave, again, whenever gas prices go up, do we really get anything else for the product? It burns up. Exits our exhaust tank, you know, whenever gas shot down, which I find very, very, very strange, because whenever you look at the global economy, things haven't changed that much.
No.
Whenever you look at other aspects, things haven't changed that much. But you have you tell me, Rich, have you ever in your entire life saw where a hurricane was even projected to hit anywhere where there was refineries that gas didn't go up?
Gas goes up every time.
Every time.
Except this time.
When a hurricane hit and gas dropped something to the effect of 9 cents within 2 days after a hurricane hit.
Yeah.
I have never seen that in my entire life.
Makes no sense. All the oil companies seem to need is the threat of a disturbance in the supply, whether it's pirate ships in the Straits of Hormuz interfering with gasoline tanker shipping, or the possibility of a tsunami or a hurricane, boom, they jump up. And then after it's over, they creep and trickle right back down. But never notice they never drop 20 cents a shot, but they go up 20 cents almost.
Except for
all
in
the
last month.
Just recently.
And again, gas has dropped at a rate, in a 1 week drop rate that it hasn't since 2008. That was whenever I was talking about it bottoming out.
Mm-hmm.
Why? It makes, again, we're back to that. You've got 8%, roughly 8% of the refined gas for the nation in that region that took a hit. And I mean, if you only factored in just that 8% on $3 a gallon gas, you're looking at a 24% jack in price.
Right.
And it drops 9 cents. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense. On the surface, it doesn't. You know, and again, that's another thing. So it's another argument for another day, but I've never seen that before in my life. Never.
I kept waiting for it to start soaring when they started predicting this storm, and it just kept on going down.
And the one thing too that plays in big, and I don't know how quite everything's playing in here. I can't nail anything, but I do know that whenever gas is around $4 a gallon, everybody's ticked off to a max every time that they fill their tank, and they want somebody's head. And it would not be good for anybody that's an incumbent, especially a president.
Yeah.
If you look before the last election, fuel prices skyrocketed. Gas shot way up right before the election. You're looking at, I mean, McCain was tied with Bush, everything else. And George Soros had purchased a ton, and I use that lightly, of oil futures that he sold off many of within a month after the elections. There's a man that likes to manipulate markets.
You know what he's buying now, don't you?
What's that?
Gold. Soros. Yeah. Yeah, Soros has been sucking up gold is what he's been buying recently. So.
Wow, shock,
yeah.
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
So the master manipulator of markets and economies is purchasing gold. Yeah, I don't know, but Rich, I do know that I appreciate you. I appreciate you coming in and joining me this evening. I also appreciate Carl Bearden calling in earlier, and I thank Dave for jumping in there and helping us out while we had some technical difficulties going on here in the studio. I know that you said that you didn't hear the transaction with Pamela Geller. Now, do you know who Pamela Geller
oh, yeah.
is?
Yeah.
Yeah. with Atlas Shrugged.
Wonderful lady, yeah.
And it blew my mind whenever she had this exchange on CNN. Now, if you notice again how she's trying to be baited, how the situation is trying to be redirected, and virtually, I mean, she handles herself in this exchange like I think that everybody should.
All right, our fifth story out front now is a controversial ad that many say is hateful toward Muslims. It will be showing up at New York City subway stations next week. And here is what it reads. In any war between the civilized man and the savage, support the civilized man. Support Israel. Defeat jihad. New York's Metropolitan Transportation Authority tried to reject this ad, but a federal judge ruled it free speech and forced them to put it up. Out front tonight, the woman behind the ad, Pamela Geller. I asked her why she's doing it.
Well, there have been a series of anti-Israel ads that have been running for years in the New York City subway system and New York City Metro Transit and across the country as well. I submitted my ads when anti-Semitic ads were running in the subway last year, September, and my ads were rejected. And, you know, the First Amendment protects all speech, not just ideas that we like, but ideas that we don't like, because then who would decide what's good and what's forbidden? The government? Violent rioters? So we sued. My organization sued. My law firm, American Freedom Law Center, mm-hmm. We triumphed. And it was a triumph for First Amendment, because it wasn't just the fact that my ads had to go up. It was that the judge ruled that their regulations and standards were unconstitutional. So Monday was the day. Next Monday is the day they're scheduled to go up. I'm running them because I can.
All right, so you can. But does that mean that you should?
Well, why should we allow only one narrative out there? I think we need to talk about this. The fact that there's been such a visceral reaction to these ads, and particularly in the media, it, to me, speaks to a much larger problem. Mm-hmm. The problem is this increasing Sharia. The blasphemy laws under the Sharia says you cannot offend Islam. You cannot criticize Islam.
But when you say one narrative, I see your ad, and I see the same narrative that an anti-Israel ad would have. It's a narrative of hate.
Really? I have to tell you, I think any war against innocent civilians is savagery. I think the tens of thousands of rockets coming into Israel from Gaza, targeting homes and schools is savagery. I think the murder of the Fogel family was savagery. I think the blowing up of a bus in Bulgaria, Jewish women and children on holiday is savagery. I think Daniel Pearl's beheading is savagery. I think that there is...
But why call the whole religion savages?
How am I doing that? There's no Islam in the ad or Muslim in the ad.
Okay, but the word jihad actually means struggle in technically in the Quran to improve yourself, to make yourself a better person. It doesn't mean just going out and suicide bombing people.
Well, I beg to differ.
But that is what the word means. It means struggle.
Actually, in the Quran, there nothing speaks to a spiritual struggle. It's all holy war. And the jihadists that are committing jihad are citing Quranic chapter and verse as a holy war.
And they may be, and I don't think that there's anybody in that religion, right, people who would say, okay, I'm all right with that. The vast majority of Muslims would say that our religion is a religion of peace and tolerance and love, just like Jews would say, or Christians would say.
But Christians are not beheading people and slaughtering people in the name of Christ, and Jews are not doing it in the name of Hashem. There is a faction. There is a very significant faction of devout Muslims, jihadists, that believe in this. Now, clearly all Muslims do not sanction jihad and do not sanction what's going on, these violent protests. But I will not abridge my speech. I will not sacrifice my speech so as not to offend savages. And we do need to talk about this, Aaron. There have been
Let's talk about the word savage, all right?
Okay.
The word savage, dictionary word,
yeah.
When we refer uncivilized and barbarous. Obviously, over history, this has been a word that has been used in very, very racially negative terms about African Americans. It's a word that is, I think, fair to say, people implied feel is very negative and derogatory. So why did you choose to call them savages?
Because any war on the civilized man or innocent civilians is savagery. And you're accusing me of thought crimes. You're implying, you're twisting the message. There's a misinterpretation here. Any war on innocent civilians is savagery. It is a word. It is a dictionary-defined word. I frankly cannot cotton to this twisting of the word that it means something else. I meant what I said, and I stand behind it. There had been over 20...
What you said, though, was you're doing this because you have free speech.
No.
And just because I can come out and say all kinds of things about somebody because I can say it doesn't mean that I say it.
That's what I'm saying.
But I don't think my message is controversial. There have been close to 20,000 Islamic attacks since 9/11, each one with the imprimatur of a Muslim cleric. We need to be able to discuss this thing. This doesn't mean that all Muslims subscribe to this, but there is a problem. And part of the problem is you can't talk about it. Look what's happening. If it's not my ad, then it's a Danish cartoon. If it's not a Danish cartoon, it's a Swedish cartoon. And now it's a French cartoon. And if it's not a French cartoon, it's a YouTube clip. And if it's not a YouTube clip, it's
what
a...
What did you think of the movie? The trailer. Did you see it?
I didn't see it.
You didn't see it?
No. Why would I see it?
I don't know. I mean, you've just someone who in the past has obviously taken on this issue. Obviously, you did not support the mosque near Ground Zero.
No, because it's
along with actually Steve Klein, a man who was a consultant on the innocence of Muslims, along with Nikula.
I don't know Steve Klein. I don't care. It doesn't matter. This is freedom of expression. This is freedom of speech. It protects all speech. You don't like it? That's fine. You don't have to like it. But to try to bridge my speech is imposing the Sharia. You're imposing the blasphemy laws on a free society.
Whether I like it or anyone likes it isn't necessarily the point. The point is, if your goal is to try to create tolerance and deal with some of the hate and horrible acts that have happened, is your ad the way to do it?
Yes, we have to increase awareness on imposing the blasphemy laws in the West. And my way, there's no tolerance on my side. I don't want to kill anybody. I mean, there are things I see that get me very angry, but I'm not going to go out and burn embassies and kill people. I'm not going to do it.
What if someone was hurt because of your ad?
I'm not responsible for other people's actions. It doesn't make any sense. It's like a man going in to his bedroom and finding his wife with a man, and he kills him. He was very angry. He was very offended. Oh, he was? Okay, then he could kill him. I am not responsible for anyone's actions. And worse, I think your position is emboldening Islamic terrorism and emboldening extremism because you're sanctioning it. You're sanctioning the motive.
No, I don't believe that I'm sanctioning it
at
all.
But you are, because I'm the problem. You're blaming the victim. I'm not the problem.
How are you the victim?
Because you're killing the messenger.
Messenger of what?
The messenger that we need to increase awareness of these attacks that have been inspired by jihad.
I think the world is acutely aware of those attacks.
Oh, I don't think so. The media refuses to talk about it. And when I do talk about it, we're marginalized.
Not be a CNN watcher. It's been wall to wall for the past week.
The perception in the media in terms of jihad, clearly, is one that's couched in silencing the voices of freedom. I have, look at this ad. There were hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of anti-Israel ads across America. Nobody said boo. How come you didn't have the people on that ran those anti-Israel ads? Not one, but two in New York.
I am not familiar with those ads, but I want to ask you something important.
But you see, you're not
from both sides.
But you're not familiar with those ads, which tells you that there is a systemic, institutionalized, A, anti-Israel bias in the media, and B, this.
Well, I have to say, I love visiting Israel, and across the Middle East. I would certainly not.
I'm not accusing you of anti-Semitism. I'm pointing something out to you. Nobody talked about the ads. It wasn't just you, Aaron. Nobody talked about the anti-Israel ads that were up on New York City Metro and that were up in New York City subways.
They call it the creep of Sharia, and it is. And then people that deny that are naive, and we can't talk about it. And, we have a lot of other problems. That's not the only problem we have, but that's a big issue.
Well, and again, the fact that you can't talk about it makes it even that much worse.
Right.
The fact that we can't be honest about some of the issues it faces.
And she threw a number out there in that conversation that since 9/11 there has been 20,000, I almost missed that, but 20,000 attacks by Muslim extremists in a little more than 10 years. 20,000. Where's that number in the press? I haven't heard anybody talking about that.
Do you remember back a few years ago, whenever France was having, for like over 30 days, they had fires every night where they're setting cars on fire and everything else. And in the entire time, you heard it referred to as disenfranchised youth, unemployed youth. These were in Muslim communities, and again, I'm not trying to beat up on anybody, and I hate the fact that you got to try to clarify everything and every statement you make. But you can't share facts without feeling the need to have to quantify and clarify that you're not trying to be I guess, critical of any group or sect of people.
Well, France and Britain both, they have zones in their countries that are no-go zones for law enforcement. They won't go into these areas of their country because they are all Muslim, and they operate their own judicial system and their law enforcement. It's outside the laws of the countries where they where they're at. And they basically take over, and they have a small little country. You know, you always heard about Chinatown. It's the same kind of thing. They do their own thing, and law enforcement doesn't go in there. Dearborn, Michigan is getting close to that right now.
It's getting very close to that.
You know, you can't – they have a Muslim festival in Dearborn, and you're a block away handing out scripture or Bibles, and you will be run off by the police. And if you're not run off – There's a good chance that you're going to be accosted by a group of Muslims who are going to run you out and probably do you some bodily harm just because you want to pass out a Bible or copies of some scripture, which is outrageous.
Well, which is so much for the arena of ideas.
Right.
So, I mean, and again, anytime that there's a lot of people out there that say things that I don't like. That, you know, we've got to be. It's just like with anything else that we talked about earlier. You have to follow and adhere to some principles.
Right.
And that also means to allow some of these folks to say some of the things that you don't like and you find offensive.
Yeah.
Because again, who do we want judging that? Who do we want that is laying down the standards for what we can say and what we can't?
Right. Yeah. We have to be tolerant. They don't have to be tolerant.
Now, and that's the whole thing. In this country today, tolerance has been confused with acceptance.
Right.
And that's not the case. We can tolerate opposing views. We don't have to accept
right.
them.
We don't have to have them put on us.
And every time, in so many different situations, if we don't accept them, we're called intolerant.
Right.
And that's where the definitions of words are changing to such a degree that really, honestly, it's tough to communicate any point.
Well, like they talked about the term savage and, you know, right, it's a dictionary term.
It's a dictionary term, and what did she try to bring into it? She tried to bring race
right.
into it.
Right.
And so many things that they normally do. She pulled in that little short skit of close to around 7 minutes, she pulled almost every stunt that the left argues from.
Who was that interviewing her?
It is a newscaster on CNN. Her name is Ann. I cannot remember her last
name. I heard
the
name. I thought it might have been Soledad O'Brien for a minute because she's like that too.
Yeah, she is. But then again, we're talking about a mold and a philosophy and a viewpoint and how that filters through.
Well, Ted Turner's still ahead of. Is he involved in CNN or no? That's TNN.
Yeah, and I think that I think he's gotten rid of a lot of his interests on.
It's good because he's about had it. I heard his comments about saying that soldiers and veterans committing suicide was a good thing. And
what?
Yeah, he got it was on an interview with somebody from CNN, and they were talking about the high rate of suicide among. Military veterans and active duty people. And he said that was a good thing. He said, because I guess his thought was, well, we shouldn't be going around killing people all over the world without some kind of mental consequence to the people.
He's an idiot.
He absolutely is an idiot. And he had to walk it back, which it's too late. You don't.
You
say something like that, right. That's what you think. You walk it back all day long, but it doesn't change the fact that that's what he believes.
And absolutely. And you know what? That idiot's got a right to sit and make a statement like that. But I'm going to tell you, it just we also have the right to call him an idiot.
That's right. That's right. Backlash. You get backlash when you talk like that.
It's kind of like this. You know, we have the freedom to do whatever we want to do. We should have. But we don't have the freedom to choose the consequences.
Right.
And that's a classic case. I mean, you know, if people think of you as an idiot, guess what? You know, you don't have that choice.
Yeah.
You don't have that choice to change that.
Yeah, I agree.
But, Rich, one of the things, I guess we're going to close things up here. But one of the things that that I want to do is thank you for coming in this evening, and I apologize for the whole headphone thing.
No, that's all right.
That won't be an issue down the road.
I always enjoy coming in. It's been a long time. Let's not make it this long.
It's been a long time. We're a lot closer than what we've been in the past.
No kidding.
So, as a matter of fact, you'll be able to leave here and probably, what, make it home in like 20 minutes or so?
Maybe faster.
Maybe faster. So that's a blessing. I'm about 15 minutes away, so that's a lot closer than what I'm used to, too.
Yeah, and it don't cost me $30 to drive there and St. Charles either. I got stuck with a Suburban tonight, and
that's quite a machine you have
away.
There.
Yeah,
that's quite a machine. I'm telling you, if things get all kind of helter skelter on us, I want that vehicle because I pulled into the lot and I thought, wow, and anyways, it ended up being rich. I thought, cool.
It's a beast.
It's a beast. Anything you'd like to close with, Rich?
Any thoughts? And say some prayers for next Tuesday that we get the change that we really need, in my opinion. And there's a lot of important things going on, a lot of local stuff and national stuff. And the direction America goes is going to take a Tuesday is going to be a big day.
Don't let anybody kid you. There's a wide variety. There's a big distance between many of the candidates. There's
absolutely
a big distance.
Yeah.
Because somebody agrees or because somebody votes on a the same legislation. You know, many times people will vote for. Last week we talked to Kurt Barr. And Kurt Barr, whenever I asked him the thing that surprised him the most was the fact that he was on the opposite side of those that he thought he would fall in line with on many issues, and that he found himself voting for or against a bill that also found him voting in the same manner as some of the more liberal members of the House in the state of Missouri, but they were for different reasons. And see, that's another thing. Whenever you just look flat out at different votes, sometimes it's really easy to try to put everybody in the same bucket. But you need to ask questions and find out what the reasons were or the reasoning behind it. I'm trying to say that we should vote constitutionally, but it could just be the way that a bill is worded that we don't support it. It could be any number of things. Maybe the fact that it looks like it's good legislation, but leadership could have a turnover, and you know what? It may not look as good under control of the other party.
Yeah, I just saw this tonight. Let me read it. This is a quote from Valerie Jarrett. It's Obama's senior advisor. She's been his right-hand woman for quite some time, and her quote is this: after we win this election, it's our turn. Payback time. Everyone not with us is against us, and they better be ready because we don't forget. There is going to be hell to pay. Congress won't be a problem for us this time. Now, does that sound kind of ominous to you? I mean, it does to me.
It sounds very ominous. That is something to keep into consideration. And again, you know, who could get by with a statement like that?
No. That's just a big-time threat. And you think we enjoy a lot of freedom on the Internet. We enjoy a lot of freedom a lot of ways right now, and that could easily be taken away.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, like she said, people that speak out against this administration better watch out. And that's that gives me enough pause to not that I would consider voting for reelecting President Obama, but I have to think that that's the way they think. I really do.
And you know what? I take them at their word.
Yeah. Well, they've told us how they were going to do things in the past, other than the transparency thing. That hasn't quite gone as he had said.
No, it was one of those Jedi mind tricks. I'm afraid. We're going to close things out. Thank you for listening to Hillbilly Logic on this evening. Thanks, Rich, for coming in. Appreciate it. And we're going to close this out once again, because I think this is Rich hasn't heard it. I think it's telling. I think it's very telling. And I know some of you out there have heard it, but again, think about when this was done, and you know what the president claims that he said about terrorism, and when he said it, and I think you'll really appreciate this little piece. Thanks for listening. Tune in next Thursday, the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. Check out Dave Cord on Mondays, and of course Lisa Payne-Nager on Wednesdays.
Tonight's topic, the terrorist attack last month on U.S. Embassy in Libya that killed four Americans, including our ambassador to that country. 3 days after the attack, the White House was still in fact-finding mode.
What I'm telling you is this is under investigation. This is obviously under investigation, an ongoing investigation.
Yes, good thinking. Wait till you have all the facts straight. Although, in the same press conference, we did establish a hunch.
We have no information to suggest that it was a pre-planned attack. The unrest we've seen around the region has been in reaction to a video.
Yeah, crappy Mohammed movie. That thing's like The Ring. 3 days after you watch it, embassies just burst into flames. So the administration's story was that one anti-Muslim video on YouTube happened to touch off a massive protest. That happened to occur on the anniversary of September 11th and happened to spread quickly to 27 other places. Seems implausible, but 2 days after Carney's press conference, they had an explanation for that, too.
Our current assessment is that what happened in Benghazi was, in fact, initially a spontaneous reaction to what had just transpired hours before in Cairo, almost a copycat of the demonstrations against our facility in Cairo, which were prompted, of course, by the video.
Copycats. So Libya wasn't the ring, it was the ring, too. So 5 days after the attack, the White House was still sticking to the video story. But on the eighth day, the director of National Counterterrorism Center went in front of Congress with a slightly different assessment.
I would say yes, they were killed in the course of a terrorist attack on our embassy.
Of course, he's going to say that was a terrorist attack. He runs the Counterterrorism Center. I mean, you know, the guy sees everything as a terror problem. Sort of like if you ask the Ghostbusters, they blame ghosts. You know what I mean? Or... if you ask the Foo Fighters, they... probably blame it on food. Anyway, the gentleman had company in making that assessment.
It is, I think, self-evident that what happened in Benghazi was a terrorist attack.
Oh! How bad does it suck to be the White House press secretary? Hey, get out there and tell them it was the video. Okay. Get out there and tell them it was a terrorist attack. Okay. Not to mention, judging by the sound of that video, they apparently make him stand in a very special place while answering questions. But you know what? It's not so weird. I mean, it started out, the administration wasn't quite sure what happened. They made a couple of statements, which later they wanted to take back. And by day eight, they were very clear that this was a terrorist attack. So the president's spokesman says it's a terrorist attack. Cut to the president of the United States just 3 hours later.
I don't want to speak to something until we have all the information. What we do know is that the natural protests that arose because of the outrage over the video were used as an excuse by extremists to see if they can also directly harm U.S. interests.
So do you guys talk to each other? Or... I mean, for God's sake, Hillary Clinton got the memo.
What happened in Benghazi was a terrorist attack.
So come on, Mr. President, try it again in a safer space.
I heard Hillary Clinton say that it was an act of terrorism. Is it? What do you say?
Well, we're still doing an investigation. There's no doubt that the kind of weapons that were used, the ongoing assault, that it wasn't just a mob action.
And? I mean, it wasn't just a mob action, but it wasn't an act of terrorism either. What does that leave? What is it, Libyan St. Patrick's Day? What was going on? A quinceañera that got out of hand? Now, a cynic would argue that the president's been unwilling to admit our embassies were targeted by terrorists, because that will make him look bad right before an election. But hey, maybe all this back and forth has just been honest confusion. Maybe it just took a week or two for everyone to figure out what really happened in Libya. That's possible, right?
Our sources tell us that law enforcement officials knew within 24 hours that this was a terror attack.
Well, two things apparently have become clear. The attack on our embassy was planned and coordinated. The response to it, not so much. We'll be right back.
We now return to the MSNBC special report. 3 days later, a look back at the Obama debate disaster.
Good evening. I'm Rachel Maddow, and tonight we try and pick up the pieces and make sense of Barack Obama's performance Wednesday's debate, or as we're calling it at MSNBC, the worst thing that ever happened anywhere. Joining me tonight, the Reverend Al Sharpton.
I'll never forget where I was the night of that debate. I was here.
Our one conservative contributor, F.C. Cup.
This has been the best week of my life.
And joining us from outside the University of Colorado, where he has refused to eat, shower, or sleep since the debate, Chris Matthews.
Hey, what the hell happened? I want answers!
President Sharpton, we'll start with you. How do you think the president did?
Well, I think he did bad. But I would like now to make an excuse for why he was bad. You see, Obama was poisoned by the altitude. You see, Denver, Colorado is a mile high. Now, there is no way to know for sure how many feet that is. But it could be upwards of a million. Now, Obama's from Hawaii, which is a mile below the earth. So for him, speaking in Colorado was like being flung 2 miles straight into the air and then having to give a speech in outer space.
Chris, were you disappointed in the president's performance?
Disappointed? Never been so disgusted in my life. I feel bad forever. I had to, you know, move the podiums afterwards because Obama took a giant dump behind him.
Pretty harsh, Chris.
That's true. He stunk. It's one thing that President Obama had nothing to say, but why was he letting Governor Romney talk? Forgot the first rule of debating, always be interrupting. When I don't have points to make on my show, I make up for it by screaming at people. That's how you win a debate.
Well, Chris, I don't know about that.
Bye, you're wrong. See, debate's over. I win.
All right, F.C. Cup, anything to add from the conservative perspective?
No, Rachel, I'm happy to just listen and smile. I believe the term is gloating.
Rachel, if I may, I've come up with another excuse, jet lag. Colorado is 2 time zones behind Washington. That makes it very hard for the internal clock to adjust. Also, Denver is in what's known as the Western Hemisphere. So, say you need to go to the bathroom in Washington, D.C. When you flush, the water goes clockwise. Whereas in Colorado, when you flush, the water shoots straight up your ass. It can throw a man off his game.
I'll admit, it wasn't the president's best night, but was Romney any better? I mean, why isn't the media talking more about this classic Romney gaffe?
And state of a state, you're going to get what you got last year, plus inflation.
Talk much, Governor? Is it inflation or inflation? And if so, what is inflation? Let's take another look.
Plus inflation.
Not exactly presidential. And can we freeze frame it for a second? Nice face, Governor. I don't know how they're going to spin that one.
Okay. I have a third worst excuse. I believe that on the night of the debate, Mitt Romney and Barack Obama switched bodies. Perhaps. And this is just a theory. Perhaps they were exchanging pleasantries backstage, and Mitt said, "Man, it's not easy raising 5 boys. And then Barack said, "You should try raising 2 girls. And then they laughed, and at the exact same time, they said, "What I wouldn't give to switch places." Lightning strike, just like that. Romney's cool, Obama got no game.
Moving forward, any advice for Obama in his second debate, Chris?
Yeah, stop being a pussy. Yeah, push around for 90 minutes. You need to make him fear you again. All right, it's time to go full-blown Tyson. Show up in the next debate with a face tattoo. Not one of those subtle ones, but one of these jobs, you know? When he goes to shake your hand, you bite his ear, you spit on the ground, you yell, "What are you going to do, arrest me? I'm the President of the United States."
Okay, all right, let's take a break. When we return, a new segment called "Is Winning the Election Even That Important?" The answer might surprise you.
I got laid off in 2009, and I still haven't found a job. I don't want to vote for Romney, but I really thought things would be better by now.
Real change takes more than one term, or even one president. I don't know if it will even happen in 8 years. Might take 12. Frankly, I might be long dead. Who here has a job? Oh, there we go. And what do you do, sir?
I'm a manager at Burger King.
And where were you 4 years ago? Probably working the counter, right?
I was a vice president for Bank of America.
Oh, okay. The point is that today you're a manager at one of America's biggest companies. That's a success story. Probably get free burgers, right?
No one gets free burgers. I actually had a fire guy for eating a burger while on the clock. He got somebody to throw a brick through the window. So.
There you go. Free brick. Anyone else feel they're much better off than 4 years ago? Yes, sir. And what do you do?
I don't have a job. I just won a lot of money in a lawsuit last year.
I see.
Yeah, I was eating at a Burger King and some guy just hit me with a brick.
There you go. Circle of life. Look, can we at least agree that Mitt Romney would be worse?
Yeah.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.